condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello, welcome to Stacking Jacks. I'm Tim Holly, this is Matt Weber. I still like the one about nobody's listening anyway. What a great... Was Harry Doyle. Was he the best in that movie?
He was great.
The bottle of Jack sitting up there and the other guy. And Kevin could have been the best color man. That's why he's the best color man all the time. Huh? That's why.
He goes, that broadcasting school really paid off.
That's my futures up 11. That's my futures up 42. Kevin, how are you after that great introduction? Are you there? Sounds like it's a car. Anyway.
He's in the car, but he must not be able to hear us.
There in a second.
All right. There he is.
So here's a guy with a Santa Claus.
I'm back.
Oh, God. Here's a guy with a Santa Claus hat on, talking about a 99.7% recovery from COVID. Why do we need a vaccine? Anti-vaxxers jeopardize Biden's plans to protect U.S. against COVID. Well, why do we need a flu vaccine? Most everybody gets through that, too, but some people don't. I don't know if I go with these guys on this one. I'm usually against anything anti, but...
The one thing I'll say, you guys picking me up okay?
Yes.
The one thing I'll say is, you know, the Johnson & Johnson guys on there saying, like, we don't have a...
Kevin, you're in and out. I don't know if this is going to work, bud.
I'll see if I can get him back on.
Well, you know, after all, he is driving in Indiana. What do you expect? Used to have a guy who worked for us, and if somebody... didn't know something, he'd say, what are you, from Iowa? We could say that. Matt is from Iowa, so that would hit close to home, you know. When did you move here? Just out of curiosity.
2000, it was about 16 years ago. So, right after I was done with school.
And you came here and went to broadcasting school, right?
Yes. Yeah, so, I went to undergrad, and then I went to broadcasting school here in the western suburbs. And, yeah, and that was it. So that was 05, summer of 05, so 16 years ago. And there you go.
How'd you hook up with the score?
I got an internship at CBS, the 670 The Score, and I basically came in early, like 4 a.m.
How'd you do that from the western suburbs?
Well, I was living downtown.
Oh, okay.
But still, it was tough. I was supporting myself, so I would wake up at, you know, 3:30 in the morning. I would go do my internship from 4 until 10, and then I would work during the day, and then I would drive out in traffic to the suburbs and take class at night from 6 to 10 p.m. And I did that for over a year, and then the score hired me part-time because I basically was working for free for a long time, and then I started coming in every day, and I would help out on weekends, whatever they needed, because I really wanted to get a job. And then sure enough, they hired me part-time, and then I turned that into full-time, and then I started hosting, and I was doing nights and weekends and fill-ins on hosting, and I was kind of on a good path, but it's just really hard to make money in that business. And so there you go.
Yeah, well, so what are you going to do to be one of the guys that makes dough? I mean, it's got
to... Well, you have to get your own show full-time on the air. That's the only way you can make money. And typically to do that, you either have to be a name, you know, like a former athlete or something like that, or you have to be a broadcaster that's willing to move to, you know, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and then to work your way up to, you know, some medium-sized Wichita, Kansas, and then to St. Louis, and then maybe after 10 or 15 years, you can get back to Chicago.
Ah, well, I mean, it's not great, but it makes sense. They're going to school at night. That sent a shiver down my spine because I, when I was in grad school, this is how, well, brilliant people. Hey, Kevin, we're talking about schools. Hey. Are you back? You're back. All right.
Yeah, I just found, I hit a spot where they don't have those newfangled cell tower thingies yet.
No, well, you are in Indiana.
Actually, I'm in Michigan, cutting across on Route 12. But
same thing.
Anyway,
Route 12. My uncle used to run. He and his buddy used to run booze there down Route 12 during
prohibition.
Prohibition, yeah.
During yeah.
And Route 12 looks the same now as it did then.
Very much so, including the bottles.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, you know, what I was saying before you lost me was that if we have to get the shot every year, if it's really prophylaxis, why have we been so dismissive of other prophylaxis options that existed already?
One of the guys sent me a thing yesterday about how the state wants my blood because I have the antibodies. I have not heard of anybody getting treated by antibody treatment. Have you?
I think I've read an article or two, but no, I have not personally heard of anybody who does it.
It's just nuts. Hey, just for everybody, we do our little jousting on our emails back and forth. By the way, Kevin, today if you need to find me, I forgot my phone at home, so you got to call me here. So Kevin put out he tweeted out to everybody, a set of the guys that do the budget stuff. Congressional
CBO score.
Yeah, the alleged
CBO score on minimum wage.
Yeah, allegedly, the guys that are that you know don't have a political angle, which is to me is total BS. But that's another story. And I read it, and it's as usual something from the government is incredibly detailed. And if you read the CPI numbers, I mean, you know, there's a price on bread, not whole wheat, and then there's one half whole wheat. I mean, it's incredible how detailed these idiots get. But you come up to a conclusion that is kind of useful. What you don't see, Kevin, is the assumptions. Now, if you look at, they're talking about up to $15 an hour, which I think will go down as part of the negotiation, by the year, 2025 or something. Now, again, from an economic point of view, I mean, I think I'm fairly accurate here when I say minimum wage is kind of a useless number because if it's way below what the economic wage is, it's kind of useless. And oh, by the way, if the economic wage is $10 and minimum wage is $7, you can have a whole string of politicians, you know, snorting around like a peacock, raising it to $7.50 or $8. They don't do anything for anybody. And then, but if there's no way you could raise it to $20 if the economic number is $10 because you just create chaos. People find a way to do something, cut hours or do whatever. And, it was interesting, Kevin, reading that article. It made no assumptions whatsoever of, Fed policy or inflation in the next 5 years. They basically had inflation at zero. And it also made no assumption on tax policy. Now, how do you not make assumptions on either one of those things?
And the way I would do it in the business world is I would say I can't make a bold assumption about it because we don't know what it is, so I only have to work with what I have. But I can run scenarios for you, and I can give you a model where you say, well, what if I plug in this rate of inflation? What happens? And that's all very doable, and you're right. It's not in the report.
But the other part is they're getting pretty sneaky. And this would always, I know every listeners probably hate this and people who love to shop at Amazon hate this. But one of the things that always strikes me about, is I'm learning from the people around the show and they send me stuff. I've been pretty much I use the term ragging for the last few weeks regarding how we can be so inefficient on some things, yet we're stone cold deadly efficient on making sure the right people get the right contract all the time. And those, it's scary when we can be inefficient and not be efficient. And part of this stuff with the
Well, Tom, there's hardly anyone who's good at everything, so you just have to pick one and be good at it.
That's right. He's got to pick one. But one thing that people are zeroing in on, we can be totally inefficient on collecting taxes from Amazon, when realistically, it's not everybody buys a TV there, owes the state $100, right? Yeah, God help you if you have a parking ticket for $100. They'll come after you like, or what they're starting to do to people is if you, especially if you own a business, if you're an individual, I don't know if people, you know, don't focus in on this. If you're an individual and you have some guy comes by to, for instance, I know people that do, I'm not saying anybody who might. If you have a guy comes by and shovels the snow or comes by and does your lawn once in a while and you flip him $20 or $25, if you're an individual and you don't go after that or report it or try and deduct it, how can you deduct it if it's your house? You can't. But if you happen to be XYZ business owning that house and you try and put down snow removal, you know, 1,500 hours last year, they're gonna be basically up your behind saying, who did you give that to? And you can't really deduct it if it's a person unless there's a 1099. And they're gonna be over that person like I said, white on rice. And they're going to want 15% right now of that money back. So when you raise the minimum wage from 10 to 15, you're immediately taking 75 cents an hour back to the government, right, Kevin? And that's a today's
you're
rate.
Taking something, yeah.
That's not even touching income tax, state income tax, any of that stuff. That's just your payroll taxes, which I'm going to guess by next year will be way higher than 15%. And if you look at the Ronald Reagan, our hero. Oh man, the Dutch, we love them. The biggest tax decrease ever, and it was followed up a year later by the biggest tax increase ever. Yet he dropped income taxes and stuff, you know, they were pretty high at the time, so I'm not saying he was wrong, he was right. But basically dropped his stuff for corporations and people, and then when they went back and put the taxes back in, it was raises in unemployment and Social Security and those kinds of things. So I think the same thing's gonna happen this time.
You know, the other thing that was in that, Tapper Act was the, elimination of the ability to deduct interest on personal loans.
Right.
And so that reached a lot of individuals and kicked them in the backside.
Well, I don't get it, but you know, the reason why they get away with that, Kevin, is especially people who have their own sole props. Every person should just about become a corporation unto themselves, right? Or an LLC or something. Because the things you can deduct there that you can't deduct as a person. You know,
it would probably be a wise thing to do. Yep.
You mean,
Something else about that CBO, and I think I shared this observation with you offline. It got me thinking about the scoring for Obamacare. Because if you recall on that, they were in a frenzy to get a CBO score that was less than a trillion. Nobody wanted to utter the T word. And that was a 10-year score for the program. So they didn't want it to be over a trillion for 10 years. That was freaking everybody out. So first thing to know is that when they rescored it less than 2 years later, it was over 2 trillion. So that tells you a little bit about the value of CBO scores. But part two is, think about, you know, we were freaking out over a trillion over 10 years. And what was that, like 11 years ago?
Yeah.
And now look at us. We're throwing around trillions like they're nickels.
Well, that's right. And the weird part, Matty, long before your time, I'm only a couple years older than Kevin. I remember, who was the president that went over, they did everything they possibly could to keep the budget under $1 billion, like in Johnson's time and so forth. That's when they started adding the Social Security. That's when people started playing with the numbers. Because they wanted to keep it under $1 billion. So what they did was they took the Social Security surplus and added it to the government. You won't believe this, Matty, but there was a time, when people were young, some people were always young, some people,
Some people are still young.
Some people are still young.
Young people, believe it or not.
Yeah. What I'm saying is the Social Security built up after the war, it ran a tremendous surplus every year because everybody started paying it, and there weren't a whole lot of people over 65. So basically everybody, the thing, they would sit there and they'd go, okay, we need this kind of surplus because in 25 years, these people are all going to be 65 and they're all going to get paid. So there was this huge Social Security surplus that was always separated from the rest of the federal budget. And I think it was...
Yeah. Well, the other thing was that people didn't live beyond 66.
Well, that too. But
qualify for Social Security, but hardly anybody lived to collect very much of it.
But anybody who thinks, without insulting anybody, the Social Security system is basically a tax and a welfare system. Anybody who thinks it's insurance, I got a bridge for you for sale, because they never matched up.
It's a transfer payment.
Yeah, but they never actually said, okay, Kevin O'Neill at age 16 is here, and he's going to get this when he's 65, so here's the number he has to pay, like an insurance company would, or like Pullman did in their pension plan. They never did that. Here's the Social Security tax. We're building up something. Now, granted, people did calculations, whether you were plus or minus. People always figured, what's the difference? We got 20 years to adjust it. But they were two totally separate things. It was a massive political fight one way or the other to raise the tax rate, and it was a massive political fight to raise the benefits. But they never were hooked together. So, and a lot of people getting Social Security don't like to think it's a welfare system, but it is. Because nobody ever paid in enough to get what they're paying, getting paid back. So anyway, what happened was, I think it was Lyndon Johnson, one of them, either him or Kennedy, it might have been Tricky Dick, said, we're going to separate that. They used to say the budget deficit is $10 billion, and oh, by the way, the Social Security surplus is $8 billion. They'd give you both numbers. Well, next year they'd just say the budget deficit is $2 billion and incorporated it in. It was a massive change in counting at the time. And they're still doing that today.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so... Kevin, we have Joel was saying yesterday that Michigan still made $11 million on their football program. How the hell did they do that?
Well, I don't know if they made it on their football or if they made it on the athletic department. I'd have to see the numbers, and I'm not, obviously, as you know, I'm not in front of my computer at the moment, so I can't check. But you can do that because you know, their TV revenue is massive. They get paid by Fox. They get paid by ESPN. They get Big Ten network revenue, so there's a lot in there, and so I can see how they eked out a profit.
Well, what the people? How do they treat?
But what does that tell you about how much they make when they can jam 103,000 people into the stadium and sell them all kinds of crap all weekend, another six or seven times a year?
Oh, it's unconscionable. How many people? What percentage, since you're closer to the Irish, what percentage of people do you think demanded their tickets back, ticket prices back? And did they count them for last year or this year? I wonder what the accounting was like.
That would be interesting, and Notre Dame will never tell us.
No. Well, I mean, if you applied it to this year rather than last year, and I don't think they wanted to send people's checks back. I mean, I'm sure they... There'd be a tear on every one of those checks. So if you count it for last year, I bet they counted it for this year coming up.
Well, they may. So you may have a lot of people who are prepaid for this year, and they still don't know what they're doing about that. But what about, the real question is, what about the seat licenses that the suite people paid? I have no idea what happened to that.
Yeah, well... I guess it would mean, how's this for early in the morning, Matty, whether they're on a cash or accrual system.
Yeah, and if they're a university, they're probably on a cash basis.
I would think so, too. So,
But the thing is about those seat licenses, they're term commitments. It's not something you do every year. You make a term commitment for it. And so it would be real interesting to know. I'll have to find somebody who has one. I'll track them down and see what they did.
Well, what is the... I'm looking at what's going on with the teachers union here in Chicago. And other places have had those same kind of issues. And I'm reading anecdotally that they think some kids are 6 months behind, 7 months behind. What is the, I mean, obviously you're involved in education at a higher level, but what are we going to do with these people in terms of the, not just the people, the kids, which obviously is very important, but the money? I mean, are we going to count this last year, especially in Chicago Public Schools, when a significant amount of kids just disappeared, and others, you know, I've heard from teachers saying this remote isn't working in a lot of these neighborhoods. You got five kids at home and there's maybe one computer, and, you know, good luck with that.
And not a really robust internet connection.
Right. So, if you don't have, I guess, how can I say this? I don't know. If you don't have cable, what exactly do you have for internet? Is there still such a thing as dial-up?
I'm sure there is, but that's not going to perform well enough. My guess would be it's you may have a lot of people just taking their classes on smartphones.
Yeah, I would think so too.
That's possible. And the other thing is that in the CARES Act there is money that can be made available to students to get internet if they need it.
That goes right on
up to adults who are out of work and need it for retraining and they're out of college.
Well, I'm going to complain about this, but then again, I'm not involved in the system. But well, I am to a certain extent. But I would say that on two or three occasions, and I'm not, you know, this isn't on the tip of my brain here or anything. There were at least two things that Obama passed, and I thought Trump did something too, that were help for people that had mortgage problems after the 2008 fiasco. Kevin, I don't know a soul that ever got any of that money. And Audrey's, between she and her friends, they know hundreds of people that had houses that had problems with. I don't know of anybody who got, money back from their mortgage interest people. I mean, I don't know. So when I see something like Biden and other, you know, to me, just another guy in a line talking about $25 billion to help, you know, whatever the number is, to help kids at home. I don't know. Are we ever going to find out a kid who actually got help? Where does that money even go?
Well, and he promised to have the schools open in 100 days. Now they're saying, well, maybe we'll have 1 in 5 open for at least one day a week.
But I'm trying to go with this and stumbling along here because there's so many facts involved here and so many different variables, but at some point, the school year is going to be ending. I mean, it doesn't seem like as you age, time goes faster. And we're what? Where are we? We're February, March, April, May. We're damn near 3 months, 3.5 months away from the end of the school year. Now, are we going to declare everybody who was in seventh grade this year is automatically in eighth grade next year without any regard whatsoever to kids being a month or two to 10 months behind, depending on the kid? And we're just going to not do it over? Or are we going to do it over, and where are we going to get the money? Because we obviously spent it this year, and God knows what.
Yeah. Well, and it's I-STEP week in Indiana. I-STEP is their standardized test for students. It will be darned interesting to see what those results look like.
Well, yeah. I mean, what do you do if you find these kids have an advance? Do you just chalk up the year? Because, I mean, there's people that say that kids coming out of eighth grade now, you know, aren't doing so hot anyway. I mean, I don't know how you just lose a year, but maybe you can. I don't know. Does that mean we're going to...
If we've been passing them along anyway, we might as well just continue doing it, right? Isn't that a shoulder shrugger?
Well, but I mean, what's the total education budget for the entire country for this year? And basically, if we pissed away half of it, what are we going to do? Just say they don't get that half? Or if we go to... We gonna make people go to summer school to catch
up? No, I think we shrug the shoulders and say, "Oh well."
Wow, that's interesting.
I think that's what's gonna happen.
So we're gonna declare everybody.
I don't remember anything I learned in eighth grade anyway.
Just because you don't remember it doesn't mean you don't remember it.
I don't. I mean, I remember like the girls I was chasing, but that's about all I remember. And I remember basketball.
Right. Well, how come you went to a place I hear where the girls were always faster than you?
Well, that's always the case. My whole life.
I don't know. You did pretty good with your last capture.
But I honestly don't remember anything I learned in eighth grade. I'm sure I learned something.
Well, nobody remembers where you learned. You know what I remember I learned? I remember that the fourth grade is when you diagram sentences, because I hated that so bad. I remember that was fourth grade.
I still don't know how to properly diagram sentences. I remember I remember cursive very well, and I'm trying to think. That might be about it.
Well, I mean, most of what you learn is kind of.
I can give you the lesson in math, applied math in business, and show you. Because there are so many times in a class where I'm running through it and saying, and this whole time you've been wondering why the hell you ever had to know this.
Well, yeah,
right. I'm sure that's true. I definitely learned how to do math in my head, because I've always been able to do that, and I'm sure I learned that at some point.
The ability to work with algebra and basic statistics, which some of that moved into high school. And some of it was your junior high stuff, but that's all really important if you're in operations, and if you're trying to do quality management and have a real understanding of what's going on. So there are reasons for it.
The stuff that I thought was, to me, was totally worthless. I'm going to go to the other end, Maddie. I'm going to say that the couple of classes I took my last quarter at the University of Chicago that were so far above anything and anybody in business I've ever seen do. Unless you were an oil company, with a refinery, or if you're United Airlines trying to match up pilots with planes or something, I took stuff like integer programming and network flows, and I'm like, I didn't know what the guy was talking about, and I could never have used anything. If I did know what he was talking about, I would have would never have been able to use it anywhere. It was so. What is integer programming, for those that even give a rat's behind? Normally, when you do any kind of a math problem. If the number comes out to be like 75 and a half, that's a good answer. But if you're trying to match up pilots with planes, you can't show up with a half a pilot. So it has to be a whole number, whole different world of math. Let's just say SP figures up 13, NASDAQ figures up 43, you're right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 208-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollie. Just a minute, we're on the board. SP Futures up 13 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures up 46. Of course, we were kind of flat yesterday, so we got to be up today. Dow up 87. Individual stocks. Apple up 45 cents, not much going on there. Cisco came out, earnings were lousy yet again. They're down 232. They were down more than that last night. They were down like 350. So this is actually somewhat of a rally here this morning. United Health's up $1.77. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 7, call that flat. FTSE up 9, call that flat. CAC around up 1, call that flat. Wow, not much going on over in Europe at all. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 57, below 29,562. They're making his run toward 30,000. Shanghai up 51, 1.4%. The Chinese stock's been really hot. Hang Seng up 562. That's 1.9%. Just as a review of yesterday, Dow Jones was down 9, not much. S&P was down 4. NASDAQ was up 20. So as they say on the floor, it was an inside day yesterday. Bonds up to 1.17. That's a 1 basis point advance. The Bund minus 0.43. You get a little of this. The Japan is almost up to 0.08%, 4.078. That's a decade run there. Oil. We got oil up 32 cents, 58.68. Brent up 41, 61.50. Now, not just over 60, over 61. Natural gas down 3 cents, 2.79. Does that mean it's going to get warmer anytime soon, maybe? RBOB, unchanged at 167. And we got gold up $3, 18.40. Silver down 19 cents, 27.21. Copper up another 5 cents, 3.77. What an amazing buy this was at 240 where we got down to. Do I have any now? Why don't we have any, Matt?
Good question.
What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a good start on the area expressways. We've been busy this week, but today, so far, so good. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson, all quiet. Southside expressways looking good. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Even out in the suburbs, it's quiet on the suburban tollways. We do have some issues off the expressways, though. Down in Lockport, Canal Street at 2nd Street, there is a crash. Apparently, a car ran into the side of the stone bridge over the I&M Canal, Chief. And that has crews on the scene there in Lockport. Down on the south side, Joe Orr Road at Cottage Grove Avenue, there's a crash. And then just northwest of there, Sibley Boulevard between Ashland and Wood Street is closed due to a stalled train. The train stopped last night at 9:30. And crews are working to get that out of the way. Only other issue in the area is out in Naperville, Route 53 at Maple Avenue. There is a crash. Weather today, same as it's been the last week and same as it will be for the foreseeable future. Very cold, overcast, chance of light snow in the afternoon, a high of 19 with wind chills in the single digits. Right now it's overcast and 11 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 54. In sports, don't look now, but the Blackhawks are playing some pretty good hockey with a bunch of young guys. They won again last night, beating the Stars in overtime 2-1. Hawks were down 1-0, tied it in the second period, and then scored a game winner in OT. Blackhawks are now 6-4-4 after an 0-3 start, playing pretty good hockey. Bulls were off last night. They're back in action tonight. They'll welcome the Pelicans into town. It's a late tip-off, 8 p.m. Chicago time. And in college hoops, Notre Dame won at Duke last night in a barn burner, 93-89. Chief.
Kevin, were you able to watch that?
Yeah, I was able to watch.
This is all on this ACC network. I don't have that.
I get it online. But the, I was in a meeting, so when I turned on the game, it was 20-8 Duke. And I thought, oh, God, do I really want to watch this? They came back and won it.
Well, how bad is Duke? Well, not the usual Duke.
They're not going to make the tournament, which is fine by me. But I'll still say this: a win at Duke, always good.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. They still have NBA talent. I mean, they're 7-9, I think, So they're probably not going to make the tournament, like Kevin just said. 7-8. So they're 7-8 overall, and it looks like they're 5-6 in the ACC. But they still got a bunch of NBA talent, and it's still at Cameron Indoor, even though there's no fans. It's still a good win.
Well, I'd like to go there when they have.
You know what? It looked like a. I would have described the game as a Cal Northridge split squad scrimmage.
No defense.
Do you know why? Do you know why? Do you know what the team name is for Cal Northridge?
I have no idea.
They're the Matadors.
The Matadors. Ole.
Yeah. So yes, both teams were playing Matador defense last evening.
Unbelievable.
At any rate, I only have about 5 minutes left, and I want to pick up on something you were discussing yesterday when you were discussing Tesla and blockchain.
Yeah.
So Tesla bought all the Bitcoin, and so my first reaction was, well, if they're gonna accept Bitcoin as payment, they probably need to be able to make change. But that was tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
What I think is happening here is that blockchain in supply chains is becoming, it's just growing exponentially. And the reason is the way blockchains work. So it's a decentralized database. Instead of the trucking company has its own database, and the manufacturing company has its own database, and the material suppliers have their own, and they all have to figure out how to exchange stuff with each other, and it's real clunky and inefficient, and a lot of it doesn't happen. In the blockchain world, all you do is it's shared data. Everybody who participates in the ledger gets a copy of it, and every time there's a change made to one ledger, it gets pushed out to all of the others. So that has a lot of benefits. There's hashing that makes it really hard to tamper with it, because you have to tamper with everybody's ledger, and you might have hundreds of people involved. So everybody else will call foul if one of them gets out of whack. So there's some good security built into it. But what's really valuable in supply chain is two things. One is that you can then, it doesn't change data, it adds to the data. So every time there's an event, you just add a block to the chain, thus the name blockchain. So there is a complete history of everything that happened. So if you want to follow something, say it's produce, and you want to follow it from the field through processing, through distribution, to a distribution center, to the store, so you see that all the way through. If you backed up a couple of years when we had to pull all the romaine lettuce off the shelves everywhere, if that had been produced using the blockchain technology, they would have been able to, in minutes, chase it back to the contamination source and just pull only this contaminated stuff off the shelves and not worry about the rest. So that's one example. If you want to know if the coffee you bought is really organically grown, you can take that back to the producer. So you have all of that kind of transparency through it. But the other thing that's part of blockchain is there's something built into it now called smart contracts, where an event will trigger something, and the something is often a financial settlement. So and right now, because Bitcoin is built on blockchain, that's a good way to do those settlements. So I could see Tesla is using it to pay suppliers. When they deliver what they need, Tesla pays the supplier. When a shipping company brings supplies in and somebody's got to pay it, it gets paid in Bitcoin and it's automatically triggered. So that replaces the process of waiting until the end of the month. I send you a bill. It's net 30. It just improves the cash flow throughout the whole supply chain. So that's what I think is going on. I think they're getting kind of cutting edge. Walmart is out there on cutting edge. IBM has become a big provider in blockchain services for supply chain, and that's where IBM is out ahead of the pack. So that's what I suspect is going on with Tesla.
All right, I have a couple of questions then, if you got a second. Buying Bitcoin,
that was a very good summary, by the way.
It was, except it brings me to more questions than you answered, as usual, with any of us. Buying Bitcoin doesn't get you the blockchain. There's got to be a separation between the blockchain and the coin itself. One has nothing to do with the other. Does it? If I want to buy 10 Bitcoins,
they don't. The blockchain is just a database technology. That's all you have to know about it, is it's a database technology that can be used in many applications, including the exchange of a currency like Bitcoin.
Okay, but who invented it? Who's got the patent on it? If I want to do my something here at PTI blockchain, who do I even call? I mean, it's not like you call IBM and they'll put the system in. I mean, who is it? I mean, this whole idea.
Well, IBM will work with you to construct a system, but and the providers will do that. But if you want to know a little of the history, because I really don't have time to get into it, I sent you a playlist of videos called the Blockchain Primer.
Let's get into it on Friday.
Take a look at just the first two of those, and you'll get a little history, because the technology goes back to the early 90s.
Well, when you start talking about tracing stuff, the first stuff they traced with different color stripes on it was a boxcar, and that was 50 years ago. So it's not like it's been an evolution all along, right?
Yeah, it's taking what already happens, and what it's doing is making it more efficient, and it's giving you complete transparency across. But yeah, the boxcars is a good example because of the way the railroads work. You know, you might have a Union Pacific, but they need to piggyback on a Canadian National track and a Canadian National train, and all of that gets tracked. But I am sure that they have historically lost track of a lot of their train cars.
Well, they did.
And,
they sure did
and
before
this makes
that.
It's a little harder to do.
Well, one thing I don't buy, Kevin. I'm getting more suspicious instead of less. I'll say it. I don't buy this crap that somebody came down off, you know, Mount Everest, mountaintop. That was a genius to put this together and went back, and nobody's in charge, and we're all in charge, and or maybe the guy landed from out of space, and he's a total altruistic. He doesn't care about money. There's somebody behind this thing, Kevin. I mean, this idea that nobody's behind it and everybody's behind it, I don't buy that for a second.
Well, I do, in that it's evolved like technology always evolves. The ability, the concept has been around for a while. But what has to happen, and this is true of all kinds of technology, is the physical transport has to grow to support it. So if you took a database now, a relational database now of any kind, and said, I want to query the database, and I can query any field, because everything's an index field. Well, that existed in the early 90s. It existed in the 1970s as a concept. But we didn't have the processing power, memory was expensive, storage was expensive, all of those kinds of things. We didn't have the data transfer speeds, we didn't have bandwidth, all of those things were inhibitors, so that when you wanted to have, you wanted to query a file, basically you could look up the account number and that was it, because the overhead of having multiple indices was a big deal. I remember when we got the ability to put a second index on a file, that was a BFD. And now you laugh at that, because now we have virtually unlimited bandwidth, and we have virtually, you know, we transfer data at hyperspeed, and we can collect it in memory stream. You know, used to be able to buy a disk drive for the data center that was about the size of a too high filing cabinet, and it held, gasp, 10 meg of data, and that would cost you 10 grand. You know, I've got a thumb drive in my pocket at the moment that holds a terabyte, and it cost me, what, $40?
Oh, I'm with you on all this. We'll get into this more on Friday. The whole idea, Kevin, that I have with this Bitcoin is people have tremendous amounts of money involved, and they don't know what the hell they're buying. And it always bothers me. And it's happening to a lot of stocks now, too. It's going up.
And to me, Bitcoin isn't the punchline. It became one of the first big applications, but the real punchline, the blockchain, is things like supply chains, is things like it's going to find its way into voting and secure some of the online voting. It's going to find its way into tax payments. It's going to find its way into all kinds of chain of title on properties. All of those things are going to come into play. And that more than a cryptocurrency is I think the way it's going to go. All right, I got to head inside.
All right.
So I'll talk to you on Friday.
Okay, S&P futures are up 12. NASDAQ is up 44. Small break. We'll come back with Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
That's the way that the world goes round.
Hello, North. Boy, by Stocks and Jocks. Good one there, Matty. What do you got? Where'd you find that one?
Just playing some old stuff. A little John Prine.
We had some of the stuff that Kevin and those guys send me every day. The music that those guys go back and then they do all the different people that all performed it, and they give everybody the YouTube connections and everything. There's some pretty good stuff there. We should probably dig some of that in there. And there's always a great quote of the day on there too. Some weirdo, but. Here's one. Who's Michael Swift? I prefer mutts. You've got one of those. The artificial construction of the gene pool is bad for the species as a whole. In a restricted gene pool, the defects pile up. The truly superior specimen is the outbred, not the inbred.
There you go.
Does that go for your buddy Venkman?
He's an outbred, that's for sure.
He's unique. Let's hope he's... Well, actually, you met his bro, though, right?
I did meet his bro, yeah. And they, of course, acted like they'd never seen each other.
Oh,
ever.
I'm sure. Yeah.
They came out of the same litter, and then apparently came from Oklahoma up to Chicago to the rescue place, and then shared the same crate together. And then 2 years later, you know, they
who are you?
Yeah, they act like they'd never seen each other ever. It's I guess Jill had a glimmer of hope that they would recognize each other and be happy, and there was none of that. The worst part was they were having fun and playing, and then all of a sudden Venkman's bro tried to grab Venkman's bone, and then all of a sudden they didn't like each other for a while.
No, that's a well, just don't touch my beer.
Yeah.
I was thinking everything. This thing these guys sent me yesterday regarding this CBO report on minimum wage. And I know that some people are intrigued by my analysis of how inflation is a whole different world of economics. And I think a lot of people think that I'm way too overboard on the subject. But I really can't emphasize enough, Manny, to people who aren't, it didn't go through it in the 70s and 80s, actually probably late 60s when it started. It monopolizes everything everybody does. And if you haven't seen it, it's been around, it's not been around so long that people have lost all even thought in any kind of an assumption it needs to be there. I mean, because we haven't had it for so, well, we have in the last few years, I think, but it's been not been admitted to by anybody. But just like this winter, okay, we came through January and we didn't really need any salt. And every week, if I go to the Menards or someplace, I see the spot where they got, 10 different kinds of salt, the pet stuff and everybody else. And I could see it every week getting smaller and smaller, because as we went to February, nobody needs no freaking salt this year, right? So all of a sudden, last week, after 1 week, I walk in and I go, hey, you guys, no, we don't have any salt. It was on the tip of tongue of every employee in the place. But this, just because we haven't had it in a while, I mean, everything, if this breaks out, like I think these people are going to let it happen, if it breaks out, in 5 years, everything you do whatever it was, if somebody says, Manny, I'll give you $1 million in 10 years, you might say, I don't even want it if the interest rates are 15%. Or you still say you want it, but it's a whole different way of thinking. It impacted everybody's life, for the good or for the bad. And the way it's coming down here, I don't think anybody has any idea that if you talk about raises, there is no infrastructure whatsoever, because nobody wants any unions anymore except public unions, and probably nobody wants those. But there's nobody that I know of that has a COLA clause in their contract. And there's a few companies like yours that I think are somewhat intelligent, that if they see the inflation going up to 5%, they're going to say, well, gee, we better give people at least a 4 or 5% raise, or else we're not even keeping even.
I mean, yeah, we get a standard at least 3%, and then you get maybe another point or two on that for performance every year. And I know a lot of companies do that. Doesn't mean every company does that, but I know a lot of companies.
Well, because that's what the number has been for a while for like your teachers and everybody else, and it's been sort of that way for your Social Security and your pensions. The 3% seems to be 2.5-3 seems to have been the number. Even though they say there's none, we know there's some.
Sure.
So let's give everybody 3. But it's not 8.
No.
It's not 10. No. And I'm saying I went through times when it was like that. And I will say this to anybody 100% of the time. It was never even. I mean, right now it's going into stocks. It's going into housing. It's going into a few. But the idea where somebody should say, I mean, it's going into the market. So when you get people on TV that are intelligent, they know way more about individual stocks than I do, because I'm more of an index guy. Some other people in the firm, they track various sectors and so forth. But I run a protected index program for people, and it's not like I don't know about any stocks, because my clients have a bunch of stocks. But I mean, the idea that one day, oh man, we're coming after the growth stocks today, Manny, it doesn't matter. You're pouring money into the pool, and at some point, the water in every spot starts creeping up. And if one lag, because it has nothing to do with the value of these stocks. It has to do with every day there's $1 billion or $2 left on somebody's desk and they got to spend it. Now, for me, as I've said before, it was very uneven, because the unions had cost of living contracts. There were unions, believe it or not. And if the inflation was 10%, those guys got a 10% raise plus the 2% other raise they were supposed to get. Me, being a financial analyst, I got nothing and didn't like it. It was like Spalding. it was never even. People who owned homes did very well. People who rented did lousy. People who had money in the bank, in those days, they paid you 12 or 15%. They did okay. Okay, we savings people did okay. Because individual people, their expenses, especially if you're retired, back before prescription drugs do what they do now, the inflation rate for those people, if you lived in a South Side bungalow, was probably not 10 or 12%. And yet they were making 10 or 12 to 15% on their savings account. So they actually benefited from the deal back in those days. I mean, you could pinpoint every single person and say whether they benefited or they didn't. because some prices, instead of going up 10, went up 20. Somebody else, it was a competitive industry, the price of the inflation went up 10, he might have only gone up 5. And he took the other 5 right where the sun don't shine. That's why it is such an insidious, dangerous thing. And the way these guys, and I could be wrong here, but I'm not wrong about the way they're playing with it, right? I mean, they're absolutely playing with it. Now, they may luck out, and it may not happen the way I'm thinking it's going to, but if they do, it'll just be luck, because they're pouring money into the system. And I don't see why the collective, I mean, Joe Biden, he's older than me, way older than me. He should remember this, or if he remembers anything, that you can't take a chance like this. Or maybe because, you know, maybe he's been in government his whole life, he never saw the other side. He never did the stuff like I did at Pullman and realized what it did to everybody. And if all of a sudden, you know, if you were the one person without a cost of living contract at Pullman, in the 3 years, 2.5 years, the MBTA contract, I'm going to say, Maddie, inflation in those 2.5 years was 22%, 25. So if you were dumb enough to have a seat contract, which I didn't, the big contracts all had them, if you were like just below that level and you didn't have an inflation clause in your contract, and we paid you the price of the day we signed it, I don't see how you could possibly have any money. I mean, was that big of a deal? It wasn't like instead of making 10%, you made 8%, and you were, you know, kicking your finance guy in the behind. I mean, you were zero. You might have been out of business. It was that serious. So I mean, so to play with it, you know, it's like playing with fireworks. If you're 5 years old, I mean, what bad can happen, right? But I don't
you're
see.
Kinda, are you talking about the $15 minimum wage still, or are you talking about the Fed pumping money into the market?
What I'm saying is,
you kind of intertwine the two.
Well, but I'm saying it. Everything anybody does now, if you don't anticipate it, I'm saying at $15 minimum wage, if we end up with 10% inflation for the next 5 years, $15 minimum wage might be below market. It's not even an event, right?
Yeah, that's probably true.
But if you know, but right now I don't see how most places can pay $15, do you? I mean, if you did it tomorrow.
Right, that's my big concern about it, and I was having a discussion about it with some friends, and we need to go to break here in a little bit, or like 30 seconds, because we have Russell coming up after the break. But, one, you worry that you're gonna lose a bunch of jobs, and I know the CBO is predicting, you know, losing about 1.5 million jobs if we go to $15 minimum wage. And two, the people just above the minimum wage at that company, the middle people, I assume will not get a raise because they're making up for the $15 low-end people. And so their purchasing power goes down, so they're sort of negatively affected. I mean, there's people, there's a positive effect and a potential negative effect. And I don't know, you know, if it levels out and it's no big deal and it's fine and you're just helping the bottom end, or if there's a longer-term repercussions that hurt people. I don't know.
Well, Manny, the theory, and I'll be real brief here, there's a whole economic theory to wages that is 95% of what people should know. The minimum wage is just there. It's a number. Sometimes it affects it, sometimes it doesn't. I mean,
well, it's just there when it's $7.25.
Right.
If it's $15, it's not just
correct.
There.
Correct. But what I'm saying is in theory, I'm going to say you make, I'll pick a number, you make $100,000 from your place. I hope you do. Well, the first person they hire in Maddie Weber's job, they hire him for $100,000, okay, and you produce $400,000 for the place, whatever it is. You're making widgets, whatever you're doing, getting customers. So I'm going to hire another Maddie Weber for $100,000. It's a great deal. Well, now there's two of you beating up on the same customers. So now maybe the second guy is only worth $300 to the firm and not the $400 that you were. So the wage theory says you're going to keep hiring until the amount produced by the last guy is exactly equal to what you pay him. Because if they're paying you $100,000 and you bring in $102,000 worth of revenue or profits, they still want to hire you, right? So the person that you're talking about should be worth more to the company than what they're paying him. So in theory, the guy in the middle, if he's making $20 an hour, even if your place has to go and start paying $15 and you try and cheat the guy making 20, if he's actually worth it to somebody, he should be able to go somewhere else. But there's like 2 years of economics you take to learn wage theory, and I never hear any of it, and it's all about what the government tells you to pay or whatever, because it's gotten so screwed up because so many people, the supply side has been built up so much because so many people went overseas. And the minimum wage actually is a factor in a lot of these places. So we've lost track of what the actual dollar amount is. I mean, I got to believe, Betty, if you and I went to work for Walmart at $11 an hour, how much more are we worth per hour to Walmart than $11? Put the two of us in the tire department. I bet we double the amount of tires they sell in the next year. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 44. By the way, I'd be selling them. You'd be mounting them. Just
I'd be sleeping behind the tires.
You'd be sleeping in the tire. Head be in the. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley. Just remember, where SP Futures up 12.50 and NASDAQ Futures up 41. We're down a little yesterday, so we're trying to bounce back. We have Mr. Russell Rosen. So, Russell, where the hell were you five minutes ago as I tried to explain a whole semester of labor economics in a minute and a half?
I was hitting the snooze button.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
By the way, I just got this little quote from one of my buddies here. Not that I'm putting you in here. Liars figure and figures lie.
Oh, you can make figure. I can make numbers say anything you want.
That's exactly. I can make anybody show a profit or not. If you give me enough.
I can. Oh, that's an easy one.
That's an easy one. Yeah,
a real easy one. Yeah, and it's when I teach intro to finance, I actually go through that. See how this project never really made money, but accounting wise, it made money. So,
I got another one of our guys who said that Milton Friedman said that the worst thing about inflation was that when it first starts out, it feels so good.
And it because we're all starting to get a little bit richer.
Yeah, we're all starting to get a little bit richer. So one of our listeners said, here's the phrase the chief's looking for, you can't get a little pregnant. Which you either are or you aren't. So and what got all this started on this is Kevin sent out to everybody thing from the Congressional Budget Office regarding the effects of the $15 minimum wage. And I, of course, said because they had zero assumptions regarding inflation over the five-year time, and they had zero assessment of new taxes, which I suspect will be payroll-type taxes, it's hard to figure out whether the government's a winner or a loser kind of thing. And, I mean, because obviously they take 15% right out of the gate on payroll taxes, and if that number goes to like 20 or 25, I don't think it'll go to 25, but it could easily go to 20. That all of a sudden that changes all your numbers, right? And if inflation is 8 to 10% a year, which I think it might be if they keep doing what they're doing, by the time 5 years turn around, the $15 minimum wage might be low, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you don't really know unless you plug all that other stuff in, right? I mean, I'm sure when you give people a paper to write, you're going to say, "Here's the economic problem." By the way, assume these things: assume monopoly, assume perfect competition, assume inflation rate is 5, assume there's not a war. I mean, you're going to list a bunch of stuff, right? Or else you're going to get chaos in your paper, aren't you?
Yeah. No, it's all kinds of indirect effects of all of these things, and I got Kevin's email too. And it looked like the CBO was basically saying that it was a net small negative, but I started thinking through it like you did, and it does seem that they're missing a few things for sure, especially the inflation point. But, you know, probably the majority of people that are working at the CBO never dealt with inflation before.
Well, that's probably true. Yeah. I mean, it's, like I said, it's a, I mean, I can tell that it, I was just mentioning earlier, you didn't hear it, and I don't want to do it again, but I will briefly. I say, if you were in the midst of it, I mean, I'm saying the listeners, you know, are snoozing when I say it, okay, probably. But if you were in the midst of it, if it was 1973 to 1981, and if you were in business or whatever you were in, unless you were in school like me, which you could dodge your way out of it, pretty much, unless you were involved, it was the economy. It was everything people thought about. How much am I going to get next year? What if I have a contract to deliver lawnmowers to these people for 5 years? My God, what's it going to cost me to make a lawnmower 5 years now? And how much can I charge? And we better have an inflation clause, or else one of us is going to get screwed. I mean, it was absolutely on the tip of everybody's tongue for a decade.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, I was a youth back then, as you would put it.
Did he say youth?
But I was very aware, just because I always liked numbers, I was very aware that the price of things continued to go up.
I'm going to say that if you have the unlikely event you ever like mowed lawns for people, that you were on the cutting.
I did that.
You were on the cutting edge.
I did
edge.
All kinds of stuff.
I'll bet you raised your prices a quarter a month just to keep up with inflation.
No,
there's a.
It was the neighborhood. It was small yards, and it was a straight up $10, regardless of who did it.
Really.
I can just imagine the invoice with a line item for inflation.
Oh yeah, I can see Russell doing it. You know, he reminds me of not near as bad. Well, who's the little nerdy kid with the bow tie? What's his name? The TV show.
Oh my God, are you calling me young Sheldon?
No, I said nowhere near as bad, but he would not get screwed on inflation. I'll tell you.
Oh gosh, no. But yeah, no, I totally remember. Needless to say, I wasn't trying to pay rent and all those other kind of things, but I was always what I was always fixated on was year over year how much the price of a car went up.
Oh yeah.
It was and I guess it's because, you know, I'm like 11 and thinking, okay, in 5 years I can drive, but these darn things keep going up so much in price I'm never gonna be able to save up to get one.
Well, if you looked at
that's exactly how I was thinking about it, right? It just kind of came back to me.
Well, that's great.
Well, if you look at the numbers, and once in a while I do this just for laughs, if you look at the price of cars, you know, there's a thing on a YouTube where they take you back and they look at all these old cars, like the 58 Oldsmobile and the 62 Buick. They'll tell you the price of the cars. And they kind of crept up until that early 70s kind of, or mid 70s kind of era, and then they started to take off.
Yeah.
I mean,
the cost of the stuff that went into them, the cost of the guys that put them together, all those things started to go up. And then when they went up, we had another country that figured out how to make them a little bit cheaper that started taking a bunch of market share from us.
Well, yeah, why do you think, I mean, when I was in grad school a long time ago, the Milton Friedmans of the world, he ended up basically getting tossed out of the University of Chicago, or he left because of this, because he was helping, what's his name in Chile, Allende?
Mm-hmm.
He was doing some consulting for him, and of course everybody got totally outraged. And he ended up in Stanford, and that's where he ended his career, and I think he died out there. But he was the University of Chicago guy forever. And the main thing he had, and I'm going to say, at the end of the day, he was... I'm going to say totally wrong, but 90% wrong, Russell. But I want your educational background on this. His idea was that even if it was a really bad political situation, that if you could inject, for lack of a better term, some facets of economic freedom, that the market forces would eventually cause the political. It would be stronger than the. Totalitarian politics. It would eventually break through. And he's a guy that is looked at the U.S. stuff and had a history of Japan and other places in Europe and said, okay, everybody's going to be that way. That obviously the labor movement here, if you go back to the history of it, was not you know, a run to the top. I mean, there were people that were shot, you know, in unions, right? And, you know, the people hired the Pinkertons to shoot unions, and that's how the, you know, the mob got involved in the Teamsters, because they essentially helped the Teamsters get protected from what the Nagoons of companies, you know, hired, right? I mean, that, mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was not an easy strike up, but his point was eventually labor will break through and get their fair share, even in a totalitarian regime. And I'm going to say he was absolutely wrong on that, because it hasn't happened in China or Mexico or a lot of these places.
Well, things have gotten a little bit better for a good number of people in China. But I think the second the economy slowed down and we had the coronavirus situation, I think the reason that the government in China has gotten so much more harsh toward their own people in the last couple of years is because the economic opportunities have shrunk somewhat. And when that happens, you know, people start to focus a little bit more on their leaders. Yeah, they open things up economic-wise, and it seemed like the population was pretty content to have an authoritarian government as long as they felt like they had, you know, opportunity to do okay for themselves.
Well,
now that opportunity is going away, it seems like that, you know, that might be a driving factor as to the Communist Party in China really cracking down on folks.
Well, I think what happened, and again, you're the China expert, but my view of what happened over there is exactly why I think he was wrong. Because in this country, you ended up, and again, this was a 100-year fight for labor, right? 50-year. Eventually, the person at the Pullman factory or the General Motors factory did well enough to afford a car, a house, a bass boat, those kinds of things, and education for their kids, right? Even Notre Dame education. I mean, a person making, I'm going to say in 1977 or 78 when I left Pullman, that a guy who hustled was making $22,000 a year, maybe, if he did a couple little overtime. A car was $3,500, a house was $40,000. Notre Dame education was $4,000, right? So, I mean he was okay. So, what I'm saying is, Milton Friedman expected all these people working in China, you know, for all the rice you can eat at the Nike plant and whatever, that somehow or another, that they would end up be making enough to where they could afford the Nike shoes. What I'm saying in China is, the people who are on top, and again, I want, this is a question more than it is a statement, because you know more about it. My read is that all the hangers-on, the sons and daughters and crap of the guys in the party, they keep their thumb on the other people, and they get paid a lot. That there's more millionaires getting made in China than any other place, but they're not the worker bees. They're the people who, if you want, matter of fact, I went to those Economic Club of Chicago dinners, and a guy comes over, his lecture was a lady. She goes, "We're thinking of opening up a plant in China. Do you know anybody?" I said, "Funny you should mention that. I just talked to somebody from the China consulate." And so, I said, "I'll try and get you her number." I mean, she gave me her card. I'll see if she wants to talk to you. I called her the next day and I said, "How does this even work?" Well, we interview the person, we sign out where they want from their company and where the best place to put that factory. And I hook you up with essentially a guy over in China is like, he's your guy. He'll find you the spot. He'll make sure that the labor doesn't give you any trouble. And I'm sure he gets paid a friggin' lot. I mean, you've got these people in the middle. That I think
he gets paid, and he probably gets. Well, actually, I know for a fact they get paid by both sides.
Yeah,
yeah. Because I just having done some educational programs for professional groups out of China, the go-betweens get paid basically by both sides, and neither side is actually aware that both sides are paying them.
Well, you figured it out.
Well, yeah, I figured it. Now, I figured it out when I had somebody, an attorney, call me up and ask me some questions about the person in question here.
Ah, okay.
That's how I found out. I was like, oh, really?
But when General Motors, not even China, when General Motors put their first plant, where they make Chevy pickup trucks or Taos or whatever, down in Mexico, I think the people were making $3.50 an hour. And that was, what, 25 years ago? 30? And what are they making now? $4? It's not like
making more, but not enough more.
So they're not making the 25 that Milton Friedman anticipated to where they'd become our best customers, and we'd end up making that we'd have millions of people around the world buying stuff we made here, and it was a net winner for everybody. It hasn't become that, has it?
No. The whole and that could be a really nice indictment of globalism right there.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Although you're not allowed, if we say that, they're not going to allow you to podcast anymore.
But I mean here. But well, you know what? I don't care. The interesting thing, we were sending that stuff around yesterday, and I've already given Kevin grief. I love giving Kevin grief because he knows he always wants to be so perfect in what he says, and he usually is. I said, well, you know, we're talking about, and Lou wants to talk about it tomorrow morning. But, you know, of course, I just can't, Maddie or Russell, whenever somebody goes under this big economic treatise or an explanation about what happened, and immediately they start pointing fingers at one side of the Democrats or Republicans, I immediately think this article isn't about the economics. It's about pointing fingers at guys you don't like.
Yeah.
And the one yesterday had to do with the China situation and how it was driven by the Democrats. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, Kissinger opened the thing up. And I'm going to say anybody who could make money over there wants to make money over there. They don't care. There was a guy on yesterday from a carrier, evidently, they do a lot of the shipping back and forth. And this guy was ecstatic. He was orgasmic about how looks like the trade's opening up with China. We're going to make some money. We got this. We got that. And by the way, you know, buy our stock. And I'm thinking, this guy doesn't care about the Uyghurs. This guy doesn't care about somebody.
Oh, making, gosh, no.
You know, that there was somebody making $2 an hour over there. $2. 20 cents an hour. I mean, he doesn't care about, you know, Nike having these people working in their factory. I mean, how do we divorce how we expect our government to work if we don't care? If we don't. Yeah.
And do you know how difficult it is not to buy something from China?
I always have a story.
I really am trying. But like, if I want to buy something from Amazon, I know this opens another can of worms, but if I want to buy like a piece of clothing from Amazon, you know, you have to have a tag that tells you where it was made, but Amazon doesn't say made in China, made in Vietnam, or whatever. It just says made internationally. And you don't know until get it. Yeah.
I have a quick
question. But there are roundabout ways. I think Nordstrom Rack was one of them. You can actually say Nordstrom Rack made in USA, and they'll only show you things made in USA as you go through the site. But
two things.
I thought there was always supposed to be a full disclosure as to where something was made before you buy it.
I don't know about it. I don't know in a catalog. I think you can always pick it up on the rack, and it has to be on the garment.
Yeah, no, it's definitely on the garment. But it's I'll go through pictures and try to see if I can see the tag, and the tag's usually covered up. On the picture, where you can see the size, but you don't see the made-in part.
I got a question for you, and Maddie can't answer because he's heard me say it before. I'm going to say 7-8 years ago, read this article about this couple and a couple kids. They're like the family, like you. I don't know if they were in Naperville, wherever you are. Anyway, they decided they weren't going to buy anything from China that year.
Yeah.
They made it to May, and they had a cave. What made them cave?
What would they have to buy from China that you couldn't get anywhere else? I have no idea.
They promised the 4-year-old a little blow-up swimming pool, and they were not made anywhere else in the world but China.
Oh, goodness.
So it was either not give the kid a swimming pool or buy the thing from China. So they made it to May, but they said how difficult it was for the 5 months to just have nothing from there.
It is. Now, Vietnam... Usually you can get most of the same exact things from Vietnam now, or Indonesia or somewhere else. But not only is it hard to do, it's hard to just get the piece of information to make sure you're not buying something from China.
Would you count Taiwan as China? Or I'd be a rebel. I'd buy stuff from Taiwan.
Oh, I totally would buy something from Taiwan.
Yeah, I mean, I
feel like we all should be.
But how do you divorce the fact of... People are pissed at their government, and they're pissed at Nike. But it'll never translate into not buying Nikes, because I'd buy some stuff from Duluth Trading, And I've been doing that for a while, and because they have talls, and so they used to have a page in the blue jeans section that were made in the USA, and the regular blue jeans are, you know, $45, and these were like 70. It's not there anymore.
I mean, it's not even part of what they're...
No, but I'm saying I think nobody bought them. Because they were $20 more, nobody bought them. Yeah. I mean, you can go online and find blue jeans or khakis made in the U.S. I don't think they do very good business. They're a little higher. I don't know if they're any better, and I never did it. But, I mean, you can't... It's not like... You can't go to IKEA and be happy with the shot glasses you bought for $1 that all say made in China and then be pissed off of a U.S. policy by letting people do stuff in China.
No, you can't. You've got to, and it's difficult, but not impossible to avoid buying stuff from China.
I'm going to say at IKEA.
No, I'm the last person in the world that wants to add more rules, but I think if something is listed for sale online, it should say where it was produced.
Well, I remember.
You shouldn't find out when it shows up.
But Russell, it is so uneven. I mean, we know all the bad things they've done. I mean, if you're Bill Gates or if you're John Lennon was still alive, I mean, if you walk in the Oval Office and you say, hey, these idiots bought five bazillion computers and they bought three things of software, I'm thinking that maybe they're pirating the software. Or if John Lennon says, everybody in China's got a Beatle album and we didn't sell it to them, where the hell did they get it? I mean, you got to be a serious bitch. But if you're Pepsi or Coke and you walk in and say, hey, I'm selling a Coke a day to a trillion people or however many people are over there, lay off me. Or Pepsi saying, there's more pictures of the Colonel of Kentucky Fried Chicken than there are of Mao. I mean, it's very uneven. Some people are doing well with it and other people are getting themselves totally ripped off.
I think most people are getting totally ripped off.
But some don't mind it. Some don't mind it. I mean, when I say don't mind it, if you're, if it's, you know, excuse me, Chief and Russell copying machines, because I know that's one of the examples you'll probably bring up, and they say, by the way, we want the plans from your copy machine, even though you got a patent on it, and how the thing works and every part, but oh, by the way, we'll buy 300,000 copy machines, and you and I go, you and I just retired, you know, that's, now, how do you get into those private discussions? I mean, in like Boeing, for instance, they China said, we'll favor you in the purchase of the 737 and the 787, but by the way, we need to make some part of the plane here. And I think they said the tail, wasn't it, on the 787? And China goes, well, we want the plans for the entire plane. And Boeing says, okay, in return for 100 787s, are you gonna tell them they can't do that? Or I mean, the right way to do this would be, in my mind, if you wanted to stop it, if it actually was a, quote, war, which I think it may end up being one of these days, you would list 300 things you don't want these guys to have, and if Boeing gave it to them, you put the Boeing guy in jail, right? That's the only way you're going to stop it. I mean, you didn't go to Hitler in World War II and say, please don't buy bullets from us. You said, if anybody sells Hitler bullets, we're going to string you up, right?
Yeah.
But we're not willing to do that, are we?
Well, I think we would like to do that. It just becomes impossible when we have so many politicians that basically are beholden to the people that want to continue to try to sell things in China. What I honestly don't get is why most companies find China attractive.
The numbers,
don't they realize if you go, prime example, I think, is going to be Tesla. He's, you know, they've opened a factory over there. He's already gotten some blowback from the government over a few things. Yeah, if you make too much money in China and you're from China, it doesn't even matter if you're Jack Ma, the government's going to crack down on you. And you can't tell, I think there'll be a day of reckoning for and Tesla's going to be a really good high-profile example. They're going to try to, you know, they're trying to break into that market. They're trying to produce in China. You know, eventually they probably won't even have their factory anymore, and China will be putting out something that whatever Tesla is spelled backwards.
Well, Russell, how does
that's all. But why, you know, why did they feel the need to go over there in the first place? And I have a real hard time feeling bad for companies that go over to China with this belief that they're going to do very well, and then they get absolutely ripped off by the government over there and end up coming back home with their tail between their legs.
Well, Dr. J told us one day that they were...
After they go over there, asking our government to do something to help them.
Well, how does... Two things. One, Dr. J was on one day, and he was saying that they were making pickups over there. They were even putting the Ford emblem on the darn things. But I have a question for you. How does... Without knowing 100% about it, how does a company like General Motors, now, when they make cars over there, now 51% of the company over there has got to be owned by somebody in China, right? So they only own 40. But somehow or another, over a long period of time, I'm going to say two or three decades, General Motors seems to have been very successful. Do they just have the right politicians they deal with?
You know, when SIBO was really, I was involved in SIBO trying to do more and more with the exchanges that were popping up over in China. And, it actually came up that GM somehow was able to get in there, and it was actually the Buick brand of all things that started doing very well. They greased the right palm or something. Nobody's really sure how they were able to succeed over there, but they figured it out.
Yeah, I'll lob this one out there. Don't they sell more cars in China than here?
I think with certain brands they may.
But I mean, they don't seem to have ever had a huge.
You know, they've got like five brands.
Well, I think they part of it is the cars they sell over there, they don't sell here, right? They're smaller. Maybe they don't have all the plans for the, you know, the Cadillac XRT or whatever. I don't know, but I mean, somehow or another, they did it different, and they're happy with their 49%. It appears, right? And it's one of their big profit centers now. Obviously Kentucky Fried loves it.
The Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, and I'm not sure if they have Taco Bell over there or not. At one time it was all under Yum Brands, and a few years ago they split themselves into two companies, where one is all the non-China stuff, and another one is actually the China operations. And I'm not 100% sure why they chose to do that, unless maybe they were just having a heck of a time getting their profits back to the U.S. and decided to cash in that way.
Well, we had a guy in here, maybe I'll dig up his name because he's good at this. They were in West Chicago, maybe? The guys who made the coatings, don't call it Teflon, for pots and pans, and he said the manufacturers moved over there, so he had to be over there because they weren't going to send him from China to here through his factory to get coated and then on to the rest of the world. A lot of people have been dragged over there because they supply the people that went there first. SP Futures is up 16 now, NASDAQ is up 56. Russell, should we have gotten along last night? Because we had one day where we didn't go up yesterday. You knew we had to make up for it this morning. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. It's Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. Consumer price index rose 0.3% in January as expected. So that's got the spoos went up eight points here. I'm not sure what the connection there is, but there must be some. Let's see, we were 0.4 to 0.3 the last couple of months, so 3.5 times 12 is what? 40? So 4%? I think they're over there, 2%. Dow futures up 89. We're in Europe. We've got a slow day going. We'll see. DAX down 45 cents. I'm going to say flat and slow. FTSE up 5, flat and slow. CAC around down 27 cents, flat and slow. MERS.
At least you're not saying fat and slow.
No.
That would be like some softball guys that we play with.
Maybe me. Yeah. The thing of it is, I was never fast when I was skinny.
Just slow and slow.
Yeah, it's a matter of fact, there's this guy. I don't know, he's still alive. Bill something. Big tall guy in the OEX. He walks by and Ronnie says to him, Ronnie's a good ball player. He says, "So Bill, how's the basketball going?" He goes, "I'm deceptively slow." And Ronnie goes, "What does that mean?" He goes, "I look slow, but I'm really a lot slower." Now, one thing about the trading floor, it didn't go an hour before somebody said something to make you laugh. Nikkei up 57 points, 0.2%. Shanghai up 51, it's a big move, 1.4%. Hang Seng up 562, 1.9%. Just a review of yesterday was a dud day. Dow down 9 points, S&P down 4, NASDAQ up 20. Bonds, we're up to 115. Actually, we're down a hair because of this inflation number. The Bund, minus 0.44. And Japan, on a tear, positive 0.077. We're going to get Russell coming on that in a minute. Oil up 28 cents, 58.64. Brent up 35 cents, 61.44. Natural gas unchanged at 282. RBOB unchanged at 167. Gold up 750, 18.45. Silver down 3 cents, 27.37. Copper up 5 cents, 377. Copper remains, without a doubt, the best trade of the last 6 months. You bought that at 235, where the hell it went down to. It's up like, 80% or something? That's a lot. Manny, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still pretty quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. We had a crash on the Eisenhower about 30 minutes ago, but that apparently is all clear. We're not seeing any red resulting from that, so Eisenhower's still looking good. Edens and Kennedy have been relatively quiet all morning. A little bit of red as you approach downtown, but that's normal. Same for the south side. Stevenson, I-57, Bishop Ford, Dan Ryan looking good. Dan Ryan had a significant fatal crash overnight, but that investigation is over and the Ryan is open.
It's over after about 6 hours.
Yeah. Off the expressways, though, still some issues. Down south, Sibley Boulevard between Ashland and Wood Street has been closed since 9:30 last night because a train has stopped, and it's stuck there. So crews are on the scene working to get that cleared, but that has Sibley Boulevard completely blocked and closed there. Southwest suburbs, railroad gates are malfunctioning, probably because of the cold weather, and that's affecting 9th Street at Canal Street, and that's in the southwestern suburbs. And then in the western suburbs, in Wheaton, we have a crash, County Farm Road at Chestnut Lane, and then just northeast of there, Glen Ellen Road at Winthrop Avenue, there is an accident as well. Everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today, another cold and gray day with a chance of light snow later on this afternoon and into the early evening. We'll reach a high of just 19 as we continue this long, brutal stretch of below freezing weather that with no end in sight. Right now it's overcast and 11 degrees downtown with wind chills in the low single digits. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 54. In sports, the Blackhawks are now 6-1-4 after their 0-3 start. They beat the Stars in overtime last night, 2-1. Good young Blackhawks stretch here, and they're actually somewhat fun to watch. Bulls were off last night. They're back in action tonight as the Pelicans come to town. That's an 8 p.m. Chicago time tip. And in college hoops, it was Notre Dame winning at Duke last night, 93-89.
Chief. Russell, I have a... Obviously, we're talking about the Chinese situation and how you, I love reading about, I don't love it because of, I read it because it's educational piece. I read a lot about, World War II. And what if Hitler would have, I mean, he had all kinds of, as you go on and read more, the guy had, I don't know what his physical problems were, but at some point he was on 22 prescription drugs a day. And, they thought meth, when meth was originally came out, people thought it would get rid of the side effects of all the other drugs, so they gave him meth on top of it. But I mean, it was, you know, really something. And my point is a lot of the mistakes he made, because he really did have, I won't say the world by the tail, but I mean, with the other people stumbling around, if he'd have been a little more patient and done things correctly, I mean, when I say correctly, not correctly for the way the history should have gone, because we're better off with him dead and the way it ended up. But if he'd have been patient, I think he could have done. There were people here dying to do business with him. Lindbergh, Lindbergh, Kennedy, Joe Kennedy. God, if we can get one guy over there to sell all your stuff to, less competition, how much money we can make. If he'd have been more patient. Now, but on these Chinese dudes, they're patient. I mean, I'm way more worried about them than maybe I would have been from the other guy.
I think if you look back at World War II and you weren't around for it, and I had this discussion with my dad before he passed away because he was like between 12 and 15 during World War II.
Okay.
And, I said, did we have any idea what was going on over there? And he said, we kind of did, but not to the extent of what was going on over there. And I kind of took that as, given the benefit of the doubt and maybe we just didn't realize how bad things were until it was too late to do something about it. I think we know how bad things are in China for a good portion of the population. You know, they're basically, taking the Muslim minority in one of the provinces and using them as slave labor to build crap for us.
Yep.
And if you're into a deviation of yoga, if you're a Falun Gong guy, they're going to put you in jail and possibly harvest your organs.
Yep.
You know, it's just that kind of stuff is going on, and we know it, and we just don't seem to be doing anything about it.
Well, Russell, which
I think is a very close repeat to the 1930s.
I would agree. What I don't get is who is behind, and I'm not going to be lobbing us up. Who is behind the And Manny probably knows more about this than either one of us because he's in this, was in this industry for his whole life. What causes bad numbers and bad type of stuff to just be in the press like forever? I mean, everybody looks at this internet. I mean, young people think is the evolution that anybody's mind can be, you can immediately be filled up by the facts from the internet. If you, I will bet, I haven't done it in a month, that if you went on internet right now and said how many cases of COVID were there in China, the number would be 85,000. And
it hasn't been growing. They conquered it.
Well,
remember? But I know people over there, and they tell me in a roundabout way that they haven't conquered it.
Well, the original.
Yeah, they won't say it out, but you can message people in certain ways. You can use LinkedIn and talk to people in industry over there. And I basically had one person outright say, I haven't been to my office in 6 months, and they're in Shanghai, because they've told us to work from home. And don't believe that things are not, don't think that we conquered it over here and you guys didn't. It's exactly the same.
But so what is, we had a person here called in, actually a contributor to the show, who was in a Uber car with a gentleman who was from Western China. So had family over there. And this is in, Maddie, was it late February, early March when we first started hearing about this thing? And he said, don't believe the BS. My family says there's a minimum of 1.5 million cases with probably 150,000 deaths already. And what they did was they basically sent people home from the factories. They had people come by and lock people in their houses.
Yeah.
For essentially 2 weeks. And if you survived, you went back to work. And if you didn't, you threw the body out the back door. They brought a bunch of crematoriums in and worked them 24/7 until they cleaned up the body mess. Now that, why, who here?
Sounds like a comprehensive plan.
Yeah, oh, it does. But I mean,
oh yeah, and which makes me wonder if that's, you know, if there's too many people in the United States for us to be able to govern ourselves, and we just need smarter people to tell us how to behave.
Well, I mean, but if you went back to
and smack us around when we don't behave.
But you went back to the Nazi situation. I mean, Everybody here had an idea that the Jewish people and other people, because it wasn't just the Jewish people. I mean, they took the bore the brunt of it in Germany for sure. But everybody out of the Eastern Front, they thought those people were all savages, you know, whether they were Jewish or not. I mean, the gypsies, everybody didn't look like they were German. You know, you didn't want to be in Romania or any of those places. And the Russians were almost as bad, you know, when it came to killing people. But I mean, obviously we probably knew about the Night of Broken Glass, we knew about those things. But when it came down to the actual concentration camps, there was a finite effort on the part of government to keep that quiet because they didn't want, they had their war plans and they didn't want to divert it to go to Dachau and free people, essentially, because they thought it would cost lives both on our side and for those people. I mean, they did that, okay? So, I mean, that was on purpose. But the beginning part, they had shiploads of people who managed to get their way out of Germany. And they came here, they came other places, and nobody wanted them in. They were like...
Yeah, I mean, we turned people away, which is just awful.
Yeah, remember the...
Remember
the barge of garbage that nobody would let land? The thing was drove around the Atlantic for like how many months before somebody finally did something with it? That's how we treated people.
We failed terribly back then. And you and I are sitting here right now going, how did we fail so badly? Well, we're failing again.
Well, I mean, right now, Almighty Buck.
We're failing again right now.
Well, I don't want to... good thing I didn't look at the guy's name. This guy was a chairman of Carrier yesterday. I'm sitting there. I'm sorry. I wrote a memo out to Lou and everybody. I go, this guy's amoral. He could care less what goes on over there. I mean, if he could get another shipment under the door before something. But I mean, is that what we've done? I mean, you've talked to people. There are people that will tell you the only thing that a business is supposed to do is make money for their shareholders. That they're not supposed to be moral.
Well, yeah. We've changed that since you were in school, sir. No, we have. It when I was in school, the thing was public company or a company was to be in place to increase shareholder wealth. That was, you know,
that was it.
Question in intro to business that I sat next to Anthony Hardaway in.
And, really?
Oh, really?
Now the statement has been changed. It is increase shareholder wealth and do no harm.
Well, if you
really,
they've updated that, but I think maybe it should be reversed and it should say do no harm and increase shareholder wealth, because I don't think the emphasis is there enough.
Well, you know, I don't know if you ever really had to judge me on this, both of you guys. I don't know if you ever really had to do that. If you left it just money wise, I'm not talking about the China stuff, because that's something different. You're probably right on that. But if you did something internally in this country, and you just said, and you made the guy have to be on the 50-year plan, and if you did that, if somebody was stupid enough to pollute a stream, and yet the cleanup cost was five times as much as he gained by polluting the thing in the first place, if you have a long enough view, you wouldn't do stuff like that, because it would make no sense monetarily, right?
It would catch up with you in the long run.
It would catch up with you in the long run. The problem is we have people that aren't there for the long run.
Well, beyond that, it's for every time that somebody got caught, how often did they not get caught?
Well, that's another. Yeah. Well, I mean,
one of the things that I teach my children is you can get away with anything once. Just don't do it again.
Or you could take the gentleman from the University of Chicago. His idea would be, okay, back when you used to beat kids, if you say, okay, you're getting 10 smacks, it would be the fair for this. But by the way, I only have a 50% chance of catching you, so it's 20 smacks. Because this guy basically said that if you're crime and punishment, if you take away, you know, the murders and the rapes and those kinds of things, which aren't monetary, that basically, if the problem is that our system, if you just did fines for people, okay, if you just said, okay, the cost of whatever you stole divided by the chance of getting caught, then at least the guy would, if you think most crooks are rational, you would stop it. In other words, if you steal a case of beer from the 7-Eleven, the fine can't be a case of beer, because there's not a 100% chance of getting caught. If there's a 1% chance of getting caught, the fine has to be 100 cases of beer. Because then you're going to say to yourself, this isn't worth it. Right? And right now, with corporate stuff, what you and I have talked to before, if somebody steals, if you're a bank and you steal $1 billion and the fine's $100 million, the board is laughing and lighting cigars. Right?
Yeah.
And that's...
No, that's a cost of doing business.
Yeah, it's a cost of doing business.
Do you realize that based on your logic there, if you get caught carjacking in Chicago, the fine should be 20 automobiles, because they only arrest 5% of people that carjack people?
That's exactly right. By the way, they're now on, it's not like they sponsored a show or anything, but the Hey Jackass site?
Yeah.
They're now tracing carjackings.
Oh, and it's a ridiculous number.
Yeah, it's like
80. I've got a 16-year-old, and she has completely commandeered my car. And so when I go downtown, I have a train choice, or I have Uber choice. I was going to buy a third car. I'm not going to buy a decent car and go down into Chicago and try to, you know, I'm just not, because a lot of the carjackings are in the same neighborhood that Loyola's business school's in. It's not like the murders, which are concentrated in neighborhoods I don't go into very often.
All right, so don't even though that's what's making the papers. My my elves that are on the police force tell me that a real lot of the carjackings are just happening in the bad neighborhoods. They're just looking for something to go. They'll grab somebody's beaters because they're going to go do a robbery. So
yeah.
You know, don't think that you need a Mercedes to get carjacked.
I just don't want to be carjacked.
No,
but
no.
Yeah, have you seen the carjacking solution in South Africa?
A cannon on your trunk if the guy comes up near your car?
it's close to that. It's actually a propane thing that's under the driver's side, and they can flip a switch, and basically a flamethrower takes out whoever's trying to carjack them.
Well, I know a gentleman, friend of mine, I haven't seen him in years, on the trading floor, and he used to park his car at... 91st Street, to Rack Island.
And, yeah.
And three stereos later, he taped a razor blade to the top of the and sure enough, one day he was back and the blood all over the front seat, and but the stereo was still there. I would never do that to anybody, but you know what? At some point, you know, I'd say law enforcement's not doing it for it. The thing that gets me is that Maddie and I, well, Maddie keeps better track of this because his memory's better than mine. When we first started the show, Maddie, how many times did you ever talk about a shooting on the expressway?
It was maybe once or twice a summer.
Yeah.
And now, in the summertime, it's once or twice a week, it seems like.
And yet, how many cameras have we put in at amazing profit to somebody in the meantime, and they haven't helped at all? I mean, it's not like that you report on a Tuesday that there were shootings, and on a Wednesday you report, by the way, all the guys I talked about yesterday were tracked down by the cameras, and they all got arrested. I mean, we haven't done that once. Not to,
the cameras aren't to solve crimes. They're only to get revenue out of law-abiding people that run a red light or...
No, these aren't speed cameras. These are cameras just for what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but they don't care about those cameras.
Right.
They only care about the cameras, like if you turn right on red. I've gotten two red light tickets in my life. Both times I was turning right on red. I don't even know how that's a violation, and yet I still got a picture taken. You can't challenge it, and you just have to pay it.
By the way, I got two of those myself. Both of them are in Hickory Hills for the exact same thing.
I'm like, since when is turning right on a red light illegal?
well, if you didn't stop.
Well, how can a camera tell that snaps a picture know if you stopped or not?
Good question.
It can't. They're just. They're, I mean, the whole thing's a joke.
Well, what happened was they had a sequence of about 15 pictures. I don't know if yours was that. It was pretty sophisticated.
Mine was just a snapshot on Ashland and Diversey.
This mine was a sequence. I'm not saying 15. It might have been 10. And it showed me going into the lane and then the yellow light. And I came almost to a complete stop. And then when I went through, I was still moving a little bit and it turned red. And I was going like 2 miles an hour. So, I mean, but I mean, yeah, how do you even approach it? But the latest is, did you get the thing from our alderwoman? Her solution to the carjacking problem in Lincoln Park is to make sure you keep your license plates clean, because they're going to install a whole bunch of these license plate readers so they know where everybody is all the time. So
that's good to know.
Yeah, you have to solve the problem by making sure they can track you.
Yeah, I saw the city release. I think I told you this, Chief. I don't know if I said it on the air, but Russell will get a kick out of this. The city tweeted out a bunch of tips for avoiding being carjacked. You know, different things you can do. You know, don't go into these neighborhoods. Don't be out past this time of night. Give yourself space in between the car in front of you. You know, be aware when you're stopped at a stop sign. And it felt like reading this, it felt like, you know, giving tips to women on avoiding getting raped.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't dress too provocatively. Don't wear makeup. Don't do your hair. Don't go for jogs, you know, after work. It's like, how about trying to go after the bad guys?
Yeah.
Shouldn't you be able to, I don't know, feel safe enough to get in your car, go somewhere, run an errand, and come back?
Yeah, for God's sake.
At any time?
Well, you know, did you look at the, you know what's eerie? Is the percentage of people arrested on murders and carjackings is like the same number. It's like 84% of them, they don't even have a suspect. Let alone arrest.
No, it was. I think 86% of shootings in Chicago last year didn't even result in an arrest. I'm not talking about a conviction, just an arrest.
Yeah, an arrest. Yeah. All right, Russell. We only got 2 minutes, but I have to ask. I keep with my old currency theory class that I took in grad school. I'm totally flummoxed by this Bitcoin thing, because at least when you bought a tulip, you got a tulip. This thing, is this just a total degradation of everybody else's currencies? Or what is going on here? I mean people are buying nothing. I mean, there's nothing there other than it's going up. Or where am I wrong?
Well, you're buying something that you expect somebody else is going to pay you more for.
Well, right. Like, too. Yeah.
You know, some of the bumps up in Bitcoin price in the past, and it feels like it's China Day, have been related to people in China trying to figure out how to get their money out of the country. And when you live in China and you're doing pretty well, you're one of the you know, I don't even say it's the 1% over there, it's the 0.1%. And you see old Jack Ma get arrested,
yeah,
and probably going to end up losing all of his wealth. You're going to start looking around for ways to get some money out of there. And I really wouldn't be surprised if we could trace back to a big bump in Bitcoin occurring. You know, I should look at the hours that it happens.
Well, I mean, that's probably why gold
is happening when people are awake in Asia.
So you're saying we only got 30 seconds, if that's why gold isn't running up as fast as maybe it should be, because you can't transport gold.
You can buy a bunch of Bitcoin and you can say I'm going to Vegas on a guy's weekend, and then you can stay here.
Okay.
Maybe the stay here part, but you get what I'm saying.
As usual, Russell, good stuff.
It's not like you're the hunt and you gotta get a 747 and put all your silver on it.
Well, hopefully we'll see you next week if the weather gets a little better. Take care of yourself. Good stuff as usual. S&P futures up 19. NASDAQ futures up 63. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.